This is Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health. I'm Bobby Timps.
I'm Danny Hogan.
Each Thursday, we delve into a factor or condition that influences the mind and how to better manage it. With special guests and stats you can trust, here we go. This week, we're revisiting the theme of isolation with a brilliant guest called Emma Becco, who is a musician, who recently released an EP, which I'm going to take a bit of her own words here because she describes it so well. The EP is an ode to not fitting in, to feeling isolated because of our trauma, but thriving through it and getting to know our true selves. And it's good music. I love talking to musicians, as you maybe can tell by now. I've talked to a fair few. And something that I know I've talked about before on the show is how much I connect with music. And I realized that a big part of that was me using it as a way to emote in a way that felt kind of safe and regulated when I was younger, that I could put on a track, let certain feelings come to the surface, and then run away off to some happy music or some other catalyst to then suppressing my emotions again. So on the surface of it, okay, it was an outlet of sorts, but it was still one that was kind of contrived through not feeling I should be feeling certain ways or not feeling able to feel certain ways. And so I think these days my relationship with music has remained really passionate and really close, but is, I think, a lot healthier because now it's like, okay, no, I listen to whatever I feel like and I don't have that temptation to put a cap back on afterwards. And further than that, I think that as someone that grew up around kind of like poetry through my culture, through my family, through being fascinated in the English language and yet having dyslexia, I think music became my poetry, became the stuff that I could memorize easily, the stuff that I could connect with and find ways to place emotions that oftentimes felt like they were only mine, that I was isolated in certain things as I struggled with my mental health. And music was a way to see that out in the world, even when I didn't have any of the language and the words that I'm lucky to have reached and to have learnt now. I still had music to explain myself to an extent. And I think, despite the fact that I am not in the music industry and our guest very much is a talented artist who's really doing great work, I think that that passion we really shared in today's conversation. And I connected so much with certain themes that came up. So I'm just so glad to have this opportunity to introduce her work and also a theme that needs revisiting. The last time we talked about it was with Alex Hoburn, who won season one of The Circle, a reality TV show I'm obsessed with and have considered going on. And so I'd definitely give a quick plug to that as well. If you haven't heard our previous episode on isolation, it's episode 192. If you scroll back after this one, which, by the way, side note, if you're a new listener, none of these have to be listened to in order. In fact, I would prefer it. Do not listen to the really old ones. It's always a work in progress, something even the guest today talks about. So whatever episodes catch your fancy, whatever themes you connect with, and even the ones that you don't, maybe you're intrigued by the guest. Because you're probably learning by now, these conversations, we choose a topic, but that's the anchor. They can be so broad, there can be so much covered, and today is no exception. So that is all I'm going to say for now. And with that all said, we'll get into the conversation with Emma Becco in a moment. But first, who's our sponsor? Let's find out. I really love skincare. Shopping for it, talking about it, being a general nerd about it. But part of the reason for the nerddom is it can be so tricky to find good products that really work and work for your skin type and your specific needs. And so a brand I'm keen to tell you about today is called Typology. They're an incredibly stylish and effective skincare brand from Paris, whose whole mission is about demystifying skincare with chic, straightforward packaging, clear ingredients lists, and really products that are designed to give you an idea of what kind of active ingredients you should be looking for. And you can even browse their website by concern. And all their formulas are without the presence of any unnecessary additives that can often be used to change like the texture of the product or the smell or the appearance in ways that don't actually enhance what it's meant to be doing and can often be harmful to your skin or to the planet. And so instead, it's both their packaging and their formulas that are minimalist, so you get the most out of using them. It's so my kind of ethos with skincare, and I say that as someone who, don't ask me, because you will hear about my entire skincare regime and each product I very specifically picked. But this is a brand that I find so easy to consume and get into all the different ranges because it can be such a minefield finding good skincare. So that's all I'll say for now, but I hope you do go check out Typology. And I've got a special offer, especially for our listeners, where you can get a free 9-ingredient lip balm. 9 ingredients, all of them good for you. And that's free when you order any product at typology.com. And then when you're at the cart, just include the code HEALTH to get that free gift on us. So that is typology.com, and you'll get a free lip balm if you use our code HEALTH. Those details are also in the episode description.
Hi, I'm Emma Becco. When I was 15 years old, I lived in New York and I was finishing high school there. It was just a very chaotic time in my life. I originally grew up in Montreal, Canada, Quebec, which is like a francophone, well, bilingual city, but mostly francophone. And so I was going to high school here, but my mom had moved to New York. So I went to meet her to finish high school there. And moving at 15 years old was already like, you know, a pretty big thing, moving countries. And then it's like a city where it's a new language. Like I have to go to school and do math classes in a new language. And, you know, like there's all these terms that I don't even know what they mean. And I spoke English, but just not at that level. Also, being 15 is a pretty hard thing, I think. Like when I look at teenagers and I think about them, it really resonates with me because I know how hard those times can be. And basically, I was hanging out with friends and I had smoked weed and I had drank alcohol and we were just like hanging out. We would do all the time. And that time I was in my friend's basement and I just remember like feeling unable to breathe and feeling really uncomfortable. And I was like, I can't breathe. What I was feeling was so real and felt just so uncomfortable and so scary that I was like, whatever's happening to me is serious and like there's something wrong. I couldn't breathe. Like I couldn't catch my breath. And I was talking to my friends and I was telling them like, yo, I can't breathe. Like I remember being so scared and it wasn't going away. And literally maybe an hour and a half passed and I was still, basically I was hyperventilating, but I was still going through it. And all my friends were kind of dismissing it, not because they were mean or doing drugs. Like she wasn't aware, but I called her and I was like, Mama, you know, I don't feel good. Like, please come and get me. And I was really not the type of teenager to reach out and ask for help. But she came and she got me. So on the car ride back to her place, she asked me, she's like, did you smoke weed? And I said, yes. And she's like, oh, it must be that. And I was like, no, Mom, you don't understand. Like, I can't breathe properly. Like, I think there's a hole in my lungs. And I really believed that there was a hole in my lungs. And it was just like, you know, I'm going into details with this because it was so memorable. I had never been, I think, that present in the moment when this happened, that I might be feeling anxiety or have anxiety, or I don't know. There's different ways, I guess, of seeing it. So that was like the beginning of my journey of being aware of my mental health and the struggles that can ensue.
Right. And that sounds so tough to have those symptoms with that level of intensity. And when you look back at that time now, are you able to see What else contributed to that? Like you mentioned, to do with your age, like studying,
yeah,
and place to live and make your way anyway. So do you feel like that particular incident, smoking, tipped the balance in some way? Or do you think the anxiety was pre-existing?
I think it was definitely pre-existent. Since I was a child. And I just think I wasn't able to put my finger on what it was that I was feeling. And I think that time, it triggered like a bigger reaction, a bigger physical reaction, you know, like a more exaggerated one. But I think I had been feeling anxiety for a very long time. And that was just like the mix of being a teenager, drugs, alcohol, like the hormones going on, what was happening in my life, like everything put together kind of made that happen. Not scared of anxiety anymore, but I just remember being so scared, you know, and yeah, it's wild how much we talk about it now, or I talk about it anyways with literally everyone I know. So, you know, it's a part of who I am, but yeah, I hadn't ever talked about it with anyone before that. So I knew it existed, you know, I knew a bit about mental health, but more like, I guess, other kinds of disorders. Is that how we say it? Like, I also thought that to have like, I thought it was kind of black and white, like either you're like diagnosed with something and it's like severe and you have to take medication, or you're just healthy, like mentally healthy, mm-hmm. you know? And that's so far from the reality. I don't know a single person that's like fully, you, just like there's no one's perfect. Like I don't know anyone that doesn't have a little something in their brain that's like, that bugs them. So there's like, you know, there's different levels in how I see it of mental health struggles. But I think everyone can relate to something in one way or another, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And I think a lot of that is the stigma and the lack of education when we were coming of age. So it's easy, hey, these extreme examples we're seeing in media, it's that or normality, whatever the fuck that means.
Yeah, exactly, totally.
And so for you, when you get that diagnosis, what was that like to process and begin understanding how much this has been a part of your life for so long?
Well, honestly, I kept doing drugs and drinking up until maybe like six, seven years ago. So I was definitely like not wanting to face it. It's not even denial. It was just like, I didn't want to have to like deal with my issues and do the work. Mm-hmm. It was scary and it just seemed like a lot. So yeah, I just like wouldn't, like I would do anything to not think about it. But then what's really interesting is that I started making music about 11 years ago. And in my writing, there's been a lot of self-reflection and I've addressed it in my songs, like on a small scale, now a lot. But I mean, before I stopped like drinking and doing drugs, and by the way, I'm not fully sober. Like I still drink a little bit, but I don't do any type of drugs anymore. And I also don't drink as a coping mechanism, which is, I guess, the intent is very different. So the result is very different. So although I was kind of avoiding having to deal with my issues, it was still like, they were still coming out when I was writing and, you know, it was still surfacing and I was still getting anxiety attacks and, you know, panic attacks and feeling really weird a lot of the time. And
I wanted to ask you with that actually about your experience of what was coming up, because it was clear that there was stuff that you were suppressing and through your writing that was coming out, the things that you needed to work on. And I've had a sort of similar experience with, I wrote a novel a few years ago and you smile. I haven't done anything with it. It's been sat in a drawer. A friend is working on a second draft. I can't really face going back to it yet. So she's shining it up a little bit for me. You know, part of the reason why it's been difficult to go back to is because of how much truth came out in it, which I find so fascinating about the writing process. So even to the point where certain things, like it was one of the characters is loosely based on me, And then some of the other characters draw inspiration from people that I know.
Yeah.
And yeah. although it wasn't writing any stories that were happening, as a writer in whatever form, you tend to kind of start from yourself and work your way out. You know, that's the easiest place to begin even yeah. imagining, even if it's fiction like this.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of spooky that not only did certain things show up on the page that I then read back and was like, ooh, that's a really true thought that I didn't yeah. know I had, and yeah. yet there it is looking back at me, was part one. And then part two, the longer I've been away from it, the more elements of the story have come true in my real life.
Wow.
So
that's wild.
It's strange, and yet it's kind of intriguing. So I think I'll have to write more. But yeah. for you, did you have those kind of experiences?
I really want to read your novel now, so I really hope that you put it out eventually. That's like really cool. That's such a feat to accomplish, you know, writing a novel. Okay, so I was in a band for 10 years almost before I started putting out music from my solo project, which is what I'm doing now. And so the lyrics, you know, we were a duo, so we were writing together. And when I look back on the songs that we were putting out, they were like super hopeful. They were like, they always touched a little bit on the dark side. And then there was always like a positive message, basically. And I think because I was trying to be really gentle and caring and loving towards myself and setting the tone for like real deeper healing to come. But because I wasn't ready to do that at that moment, it was kind of like just giving myself hope through those lyrics, like everything will be okay. Like even if I had no idea of how it was going to be okay, it was just like reassurance. And I guess I needed to feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
I needed to know that. And so my music has always been like sharing a message that I would want to hear myself. So I know that a lot of the audience that listened to our music were loved that aspect of the music, you know, of how positive and or uplifting or comforting. All these things. And also I started therapy about a year and a few months ago. So it really took me like 14 years mm-hmm. of being aware that I'm struggling with my mental health before I got help, like real tangible help. And so I'm just saying that because like I know how daunting it can be and how, you know, we always have excuses for things, you know, like, oh, it's expensive. I don't know how it is in Ireland, but here it's expensive.
Yeah, yeah, very much so yeah. here as well.
Yeah, okay. And it's expensive or I don't have time or like, you know, and I totally understand because I gave myself excuses for years and years and years. But if there's one thing that I know for sure is like how freeing and how good it can make you feel because it can validate your experiences and it can make you feel normal mm-hmm. because we are normal for feeling things and going through things. And I was raised to think that if you have something with mental health, like a struggle or like it's, you're not normal, but it's so false. Like, I don't know. I'm not explaining myself properly, but.
No, but really I get it. And I think what you've shared there is very real and very relatable for a lot of people because recently I was joking with a mate about this term like mental health journey that gets so overused. And yet we were talking about it on the show actually. And he's also a musician. And similarly, it took him a long time to figure certain things out and be ready for certain types of help. And yet we couldn't think of something else other than journey to describe that as.
Yeah.
Because we're like, oh, it's a cliche, but also that is what it is. And I think that deserves space and validation too. So I love that you mentioned about not being ready to face certain things because that is the case for so many people. And yet at the same time, it can also be true that you are working up to getting the help. So in those years, you still weren't in the same place when you first were diagnosed as when you didn't know, or as when, you know, a few years later, you did know, but you weren't really facing things yet. There's still progress, even if it can feel like, and I think that's part of the stigma, right? That we're encouraged to think, okay, you're ill or you're well. If you're ill, go get your medication, go get your counsellor, go get fixed. And actually, it's each person's experience.
Exactly.
It takes different amounts of time. Yes. It takes different amount of time to get the right diagnosis and the right help often, even if you do go for help straight away.
I completely agree with you. And also, you know, just to clear it up, I was never diagnosed by, you know, the nurse, for example, said, oh, this is what you're going through. But I was never, like, even the therapist I'm seeing now, who's a cognitive behavioral, she can't even legally diagnose me. So I've never been diagnosed. And there's like a part of me at first that I wanted to be diagnosed because I wanted, like, okay, someone confirm that for sure this is what, you know, what I'm living. But I got over that pretty quickly because I know exactly what I'm living, and it'll help communicate how I'm feeling if I call it or I label it something. But at the same time, it's just different symptoms and different ways that I'm feeling, and it fluctuates and it changes and it evolves. And so I'm kind of okay with also, you know, not having it diagnosed, in the sense that it's also something I think that I'll be dealing with for the rest of my life. And I just am gaining more and more tools to how to handle it and how to be happy with who I am and the struggles that I do have. But they don't define me. So, like, even the journey, the mental health journey I've been on, has literally is also the same journey as just my life journey. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like my story. And my story has, like, all these different complex little pieces to it. And it's, like, super cool at the same time because it's brought me here in front of you in this moment. And, you know, like, everything is so cool and done so well, and there were moments in my life that were so hard, but here I am and thriving. And I guess also it's just, it can be so hard, and I understand that, and I just want, like, for people who are going through a really hard time to know that genuinely, like, there are better times to come. And the most important thing to do, I think, is to be really, really kind with yourself and forgiving and patient. Yeah. And I went off on a tangent because I was just, like, thinking about myself when I was younger, and I definitely would have liked to hear that, you know?
Yeah. No, I appreciate that. And something I know that you've explored a lot through your music and the things that you like to talk about generally is the theme today of isolation, and how not only can certain traumas that you experience isolate you and make you feel separate from other people and that you're on your own, but also, am I right in being into it that you also see parallels with your music, how a lot of the writing and recording process can be very, you know, literally you on your own in a booth, or metaphorically, you know, all the hours working, getting something in your head out in a way that people can interact with.
Yeah, completely. I don't know if it's the fact that I've, since a very young age, I've definitely felt out of place. And I think that I'm also a, how do you say, like, a lonely child? A only child?
Only
a lonely child.
Child.
A lonely child.
There's a Freudian slip.
I'm definitely, I'm an only child. Not anymore, actually. I have a sister and she's six, but growing up, I was an only child. And also, I'm Peruvian and Hungarian, and so, but I grew up in Montreal in Canada, and then went to school in the States. And so there were, I just genuinely didn't feel like I fit in anywhere. I didn't make friends and things like that, but I,
I was just going to say, it can be so tricky, that really common question of where are you from?
Yeah.
And trying to give people the context, and all anyone ever wants in that situation is one answer. They just want to figure out which box to put you into. And yet the nuances of your background and the places you've lived do inform who you are. And, like, I've had the same moving around, living in different places.
It's true that it's just for them to, like, process where you come from and put you in a box. And just, like, that's that. That's true. I never thought about that. I'm also white, and I look Quebec, like Quebecois, which, like, I look from here. But having, like, a super Latino dad, like, growing up was very different than, you know, my peers. And I definitely made, like, my closest friends were also other immigrants. And that's who I related most with. But because of, like, my skin color and just the way I speak, I have, like, a Quebecois accent because I grew up here. I was, like, always expected to, like, understand their cultural references, their humor, their, like, so many little details that don't seem that important, but that when you're growing up is huge of bonding with other people.
I relate to that a lot. It's all those little things that you can be hyper aware of, but other people aren't. So I'm just doing badly at understanding or fitting into a culture I'm currently living in versus people having, you know, that's why it's important for me that people always had the context of,
yeah, exactly.
Okay, yes, I'm here, but my household, where I grew up immediately, was a different environment, had a different background, had cultural differences, even if I'm white. You know, I look typically Irish in a lot of traits, but I also look the kind of person that would blend in England.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it's just exactly like you said, it's just to give context on our personal experiences. Yeah. So like I was saying earlier, like I didn't know I had anxiety or whatever we can call it. I have it or I'm dealing with it. But I didn't know that until I was 15. And so even before then, but also once I knew more what I was going through, I definitely felt different than a lot of the people around me. And I'm not saying that not a lot of people around me were dealing with their own mental health struggles, but we weren't talking about it much. So I was feeling very, like, different. Like, I went to all-girls private high school in Montreal, and it's, like, a pretty, like, expensive one. And so most of my peers were from, like, you know, upper-class households, which I was not. And their lives, through my eyes, in those moments, seemed just really... And this is so, like, this is not the reality of their lives. This is just how I was living it. Their lives just seemed really easy. Like, you know, they had someone that made them their lunches, and they, I don't know, like they had someone drop them off at school, and you know, they had, I don't know, little things that just, I was like, wow, their life seems so different than mine, you know? And
well, it sounds like you saw it as aspirational as well, that it seemed glamorous. Maybe
I just felt like I was from another world. Like, I didn't feel like we were living in the same realities because I wasn't experiencing life in the same way that they were. So even some of them are really cool, but some of them were so annoying. And I remember just being like, wow, like, I can't relate to some of these people at all, you know, like, and neither could they. And I know that they thought I think some of them thought I was a little weird, you know, but yeah, it's just like such a different world and different experiences. But, and it's just wild because I think about even going to, like, not that long ago, like let's say 8 years ago, going to a meeting with my partner from my band, and we're going to a meeting to meet a photographer in this bar. And we get to the meeting and I sit down and I was just like so nervous because of X, Y, Z, and probably hungover, which if for anyone that has anxiety and is drinks alcohol, like they know when you're tired, when you're hungover, like you're more fragile and prone to having anxiety symptoms surface. And so I was just like, I sat down, my friend was so chill, so cool, calm, collected, you know, I sat down, I was like so nervous. And then I was like, oh, I don't want to look nervous, you know? So even my breathing, I was like, I was trying to breathe not too loud, but I, like, if I were to just be myself, it would have been like, you know, because I wasn't feeling comfortable. Mm-hmm. And it was like trying to mask all those symptoms I was feeling. And at one point I just like abruptly like hit the table because I was like moving, fidgeting, and I hit the table with my knee and like a glass of water fell. And I was just like, in my head, I was thinking, what the fuck is wrong with me? Like, what's wrong? Like, why is this so chaotic? And I guess I compared myself to my friends and I was like, they seem so chill. Like, you know, we're the same age. We drink the same. We do the same things. And like, the more I talk about it with my therapist, for example, the more I realize they were maybe feeling some types of way as well, but mm-hmm. we just weren't talking about it, like genuinely not talking about that, because I don't know, it wasn't something we talked about, you know. But yeah, so that made me feel super isolated. And because I thought no one could relate to what I was going through, and because what I was going through, what I am still going through, is like such an amalgamation of different things, that I'm like, you know, everyone has such a different life path and like journey of life that like no one has lived exactly what I have lived. So how can someone understand what I feel? But actually a lot of people can understand what I feel. Like a lot of people have had similar experiences, and it's just by talking about it that we realize that, by sharing, because, you know, or by listening to other people. I don't know if that...
Yeah. No, I think that's so true. Totally relate to that, because I think emotions do work in very much broad brushstrokes, that there can be a million different reasons why you feel upset or alone or anxious. And yet the feeling can have certain similarities with those around you. Maybe the level of intensity, no.
Yeah.
But I've also had that experience of mm-hmm. looking back and thinking, God, how many people was I at school with?
Yeah.
And was I around when I was younger, when I was feeling this way? And so were they. And the whole world of, you know, family or medical professionals or people behind the scenes that would have known. And yet the people that we saw every day were oblivious. And so it is isolating. And then you add into that stigma where we feel we can't talk about certain things, or we're disempowered by not having a clue what the fuck's happening with us, or what anxiety or whatever conditions are in the first place. Of course we're going to feel alone in that.
Yeah, totally.
You know, and also that can be a symptom of so many conditions. Yeah. For me, that's a big part of experiencing depression as a young person, was, okay, well, I didn't feel I had the energy, and I felt a level of self-consciousness around other people, where I was like, oh no, it's safer. It's safer to retreat and be sad and be lonely, and people don't want to be around me anyway.
Yeah, that's wild. Also, because knowing, I guess maybe you, when you think back on it, knowing now how many teenagers experience depression.
Of course. Like, yeah, I know the stats now. And I know even friends of mine that were going through certain things and I didn't know. That's one of the things. I don't have many regrets in life, but that's one of the ones that I can't regret it, because I understand the circumstances. But it's difficult to square the circle. And I think there's a lot of things that you almost have to go through in order to understand it in hindsight. And I think maybe that was part of where your music was then coming in, that there were things that you've kept away for so long, and then music, which you have such an emotional connection to because it's your art, of course, truth creeps its way through.
Yeah, completely. Music is the thing that saved me, or that's helped me survive. I'm not just surviving anymore now. I'm definitely like living and thriving. I feel really happy. But music, I started writing when I was like in fourth or fifth grade, which is, I don't know, eight years old, let's say. And so everything that I was like not able to express, you know, in a conversation with someone, communicate, just like, hey, this is how I'm feeling, because that's just not how I would communicate. I was able to write it out, and it made me feel so much better. And, you know, when you are alone, you can write, and you feel like almost comforted by yourself, you know? And being alone is something that I really appreciate now. Like, I appreciate the moments when I'm just alone with myself. And I'm really grateful that I'm able to be alone with myself and feel good.
Mm-hmm.
And because when I was younger, I like would do anything to not be alone. Like, I always wanted to chill with someone. I always wanted to go to someone's house. Or, you know, like being alone was like scary, I guess, daunting. Yeah, so my music, yeah.
Yeah, well, it sounds like that you were maybe alone with your thoughts was part of the threat, whereas now you've learned to be good company to yourself. And yeah. that even though it's still you, I've yeah. had a similar thing. And the pandemic yeah. was less scary from an isolation point of view than yeah. I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
And it was partly looking back on it, you know, looking back on the lockdowns now, it was partly that I'd done more work than I realized.
Yeah. Now it's almost like, well, it's not almost, it is. I appreciate whatever surfaces when I'm alone. And I love those moments of realization. And I love thinking, mm-hmm. like literally, I just love thinking and I love self-reflection. And you know, those moments, oh shit, I hadn't thought about this in this way. But then because I have music, they really bring so much to my art that I'm grateful for those moments. So, you know, it's almost like it's a lot of emotions, and little by little, I'm understanding more where I come from, where those emotions come from. And I understand and I'm aware, but it's like, it just keeps feeding what I'm doing. So for me, I guess I have this like direct link where it just makes me feel good because I'm then creating something that makes me feel better. And it's just like hand in hand, you know, it's not just like I'm experiencing these things or thinking about these things and then I don't know what to do with them. It's like,
yeah, oh. You've got the outlet. And may
yeah,
I ask
exactly.
what that was like, the process of exploring isolation through your music? So something that's very much a solo project and yeah. yet with the intention of sharing it and connecting to other people's feelings of loneliness. Yeah.
So with my band before, I was still like when I would have sessions with my friend and with producers, I was still mostly writing on my own because I was just able to, I guess, let go and fully be myself and, you know, have bad ideas on my own and then like go over them and not be shy or, you know, hindered by my own insecurities. And so then when I started my solo project, which is a reason why I wanted to do it, I just wanted to feel really free and kind of be able to direct and like just something alone and see where that would bring me, you know, just because I had never experienced it. And so I put out an album last year and now I just put out an EP. So my project hasn't been alive for that long, but I've been writing for it for like maybe three, four years now. And that's been like the most beautiful process ever and the most rewarding because it's been very, very lonely sometimes where I've like sat in front of a mic, put on like whatever music I'm working on, like, and then started writing or freestyling, and like really, really deep things have come out where I've cried like writing a song, recording a song so many times. And all those songs are out now, you know, and like one of them, MHS, it's like one of my biggest songs. And I put it out a year and a half ago and I still get messages or comments on the video or whatever of like people really, really relating, connecting to that song. It's wild because when I was writing it, I was just like freestyling and I was literally breaking down crying because it was reminding me of so much pain that I had felt like as a teenager. But I love that I was able to go there when I was writing the song because I wouldn't have been able to go there if someone else was in the room with me. Like I wouldn't have allowed myself to get that vulnerable with someone accompanying me. So the loneliness for me in that moment was really beneficial and really positive. But then there's a moment where you're done with all your songs. And also, you know, I collaborate with other people on my music. So when it comes to the production side, I'm not completely alone. Mm-hmm. But then there's a moment where I'm like, oh, like no one's heard this. So I've been cooped up in my studio for 5 months alone. What if like this sucks? Or like then I start, you know, really overthinking everything. And even on social media, which is a tool that I have to use to promote my music, like even with that, I was working every day on this new EP, writing songs, like every day, like working really hard. But because I'm alone, I had, you know, I didn't want to make a story or something of just me, myself alone in my sweatpants writing music. I was like so boring. So even that, I was like, oh, Like, I'm so alone all the time. No one's there to, like, take a picture of me or, you know, do these, like, superficial parts that are a part of the art that I make. And so that was putting pressure on me, too, because I was, like, you know, seeing friends go out to dinner, meeting these, going to, I was like, wow, I'm alone a lot, you know. I was like, okay, this is a bit weird. Like, it got me feeling bad. And it was, like, such an up and down of feeling because I was feeling sometimes grateful for being alone and then sometimes feeling really isolated. And like my friends would be, oh, let's go do this. And I'm like, no, I'm in the studio, because when I am in a creation process, I isolate myself because I need to focus and I need to kind of plunge into those deep traumas and things that I've felt. And it takes a lot of energy. And so I don't have the energy to go out and chit chat or like mm-hmm. catch up. Like I literally emotionally don't have that energy. I have to like save it for my art. And so it becomes like a little vicious circle of like, you know, seeing friends and stopping my work and just going to take some fresh air and going to meet someone. Like it can be really beneficial for the art as well. But I know that everything I've just said is kind of just like a bunch of ideas that don't, you know, that they don't necessarily.
No, I do see the link though, and it's really interesting to hear that behind the scenes, right?
Yeah.
Because you're so expected as an artist to have this kind of curated life in yeah. every level. You know, like, yeah. sure, yeah. cry for your music, but you've got to look stunning doing it. Like, it's
exactly.
incongruent, and yet the yes. reality that you paint sounds far more real to me, and particularly what yeah. you said about when you were writing MHS and you were crying in the writing process, and you're telling me that and you laugh and you smile telling me about it because it just seems so cathartic how much you got yeah. out of something that we're so encouraged to fear and yeah. to push down tears and to, you know, be only sad when appropriate. And certainly yeah. not encouraged to cry at work. And yet yeah. you've got to show up and be yourself and bring your emotions. Because otherwise, what? What is the music about?
Exactly.
Grey walls? Like, it's got to connect yeah. to people.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a lot of people that are able to write about really positive things and connect with people, you know. Mm-hmm. And most of the time, you know, I feel really grateful for this, but I'm definitely, like, very happy. And I'm very grateful for my life and for all the little things that I have or that I do. I'm super grateful. And being grateful makes me, like, brings a lot of joy in my life. But I can't write music about those joys. I don't know why. Maybe when I'll be older, which is true. Maybe when I'm older, I'll be able to write, like, super, you know, like, joyful songs. But for me, the way that naturally the songs come out, they're always about things that are a little painful. And I find that there's so much beauty in those moments and in those experiences. And I guess I also find people who have, like, lived through trauma and, like, just the most beautiful humans and the strongest. And I just really admire anyone who's, like, dealt with anything difficult in their life. And I guess my music is like an homage to all of those experiences. And yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's beautiful and something that you often see come up in conversations around mental health is like the idea of how we grow and we learn from those experiences
yeah.
and how in doing so it can be such a strength. And, yeah. you know, and I definitely find that I'm too far down the rabbit hole of talking about mental health now to be appropriate company for everyone. Because if you're really yeah. stigmatizing, if you really don't want to talk about it, you're not going to enjoy being around me because this yeah. is such a yeah. big part of my work, you yeah. know. And yet it does feel like a superpower to be able to connect with things that can scare a lot of people. And it sounds like that's what you found with your work, where you're like, okay,
yeah.
I have this range of emotions, but in many ways, the one that feels most raw and most intriguing are what are perceived as the negative emotions.
Yeah.
But are they really yeah. negative? If you are working on managing your anxiety, if you are finding ways to turn certain things you've been through into inspiration for your art? You know, is that not flipping it on its head?
Yeah, it is flipping it on its head. And it is like, I guess, the way that I heal, like all this, the things that I've been through, like, or I heal my little heart. It's through that and through doing that and through sharing it. And yeah, I love it. I love it so much.
And ultimately being yourself is what it sounds like.
Yeah, it feels so freeing. It's like the coolest thing in the world to just like be really authentic and be, you know, confident in who I am. And in that confidence, there's days where I'm not confident at all, you know, like that's, but I'm confident in who I am, and me, who I am, is sometimes feeling really strong, really badass, really cool, sometimes not at all. Like that's who I am. You know? I'm just very open and really blunt about it. And that feels really empowering. And I don't mind if it makes people feel uncomfortable, or if, you know, my friends are like, oh, that's so annoying. Cause like, really, there's some things that bug me, and like, I'll just be really upfront about it. Or, you know, like if I'm uncomfortable with something, I'll say it. And because, yeah, that's who I am. And I'm a work in progress, that's for sure. Like, I hope to forever keep on working on myself and on being a good human and nice to other people. And that's my goal. But, yeah, it feels so freeing, I find, to just be yourself unapologetically.
I love that. And on that positive note, I think we'll wrap up there. So I'm sure the listeners are intrigued by your music, what this process resulted in. And so your new EP is called Digital Damage. It's part one of a two-part EP series you're doing. So the other one coming out in autumn. So people can find that on Apple Music, Spotify, wherever.
Anywhere. Yeah, like literally anywhere. YouTube, Deezer. I didn't even know what Deezer was, but it's on there.
But apparently it's everywhere. It's on there. So just search for Emma Becco to find all of that. And with your permission, would you be happy with Digital Damage being the track that plays out today's episode?
Absolutely. I would love that.
Here you go then. So here is a sample of the new EP, Digital Damage, and indeed the track that that EP was named after.
Thank you.
Thanks, Emma.
Picture just to see what it felt like, a digital fixture in a world that seems so lifelike. So I type the way I feel inside that makes me want to fight, and I try to not mistake love with anything that might feel like hype. A roll of the dice, I roll up the pain, took many chances, wasn't left unscathed. I bled like rain that washes anew, that feeds the growth, and so I grew. It's always pleasure I pursue, I'm a flower turned out blue. I watched the world open up for other people like they knew how to place themselves so natural. Trust I tried, cause aren't you supposed to be where you belong? Didn't take long to get that, I just wasn't. Why it feels so cold, baby, don't you wanna be alone? Things are meant to be that way, don't you think it's gotta change? I open up but never hold. I don't remember, I'm getting old. Or are their memories so repressed? A heavy pain that you confess. Tore it down, I ease the pressure. Try to cure, we're taking measures. I am tall and I am grand. I don't think you understand. I'm so real that I'm surreal. And I cry cause I can feel. I scream so I can heal. They pray so they can cope. In the end we go and smoke. And our emotions, what a joke. The funniest one of all, you know, the one that pushes us to ball and roll across the floor laughing. Tears are pouring down our cheeks. They hurt so much from smiling, you can feel it for weeks. The best laugh you've ever had, staggeringly sad, because it was so present, but you know it's never coming back. I watched the world open up for other people like they knew how to place themselves so natural. Trust I tried, cause aren't you supposed to be where you belong? Didn't take long to get that, I just wasn't. Why it feels so cold, baby, don't you wanna be alone? Things are meant to be that way, don't you think it's gotta change?
Thank you for listening. For a list of our recommended resources, visit mentalpodcast.co.uk. And remember, we are in no way a substitute for qualified counselling or other mental health support. Our show is edited and produced by the brilliant Pete Murta, with licensed music by NetSky. Links in the description. Speak to you next Thursday, and remember, you are enough.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.